Welcome to the Be Loud About What Matters podcast. I'm Olivia, your host. On this podcast, I will be bringing light to topics that are important but not discussed enough within our society. Episodes will include a range of topics, starting with the journey to conceive, pregnancy, birth, postpartum and motherhood, holistic healing and nutrition, and the importance of true informed consent and medical freedom. The goal of this podcast is to create connections, share stories, information, and resources to educate and empower people in their own personal journey. Hello, listeners. Welcome back to this week's episode of the Be Loud About What Matters podcast. Today, I have Nikki back on with us. Nikki came on a while ago and we chatted about all the things, and Nikki and I are constantly talking back and forth on Instagram. Nikki also has a podcast called Coffee and Consent, and she discusses all the things that I talk about, especially the most recent one, which I really, really loved, was about people pleasing. And so today we're both feeling feisty and we are ready to just hop into all of these what may seem like controversial, in air quotes, topics that really shouldn't be controversial. And we're just gonna go through them and just talk about how we feel surrounding them, because we know we're not the only ones. And also, just to preface it, like, this is a podcast that is a resource for people. We're gonna be talking about things that people may not have even thought about, things that are not only impacting mothers, families, but specifically babies, and literally will impact every stage of their entire life. So, Nikki, welcome back. For anyone who hasn't listened to the previous one, can you just do a brief little intro to who you are and what matters to you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Nikki. I am married and I have two toddler boys. And I'm a stay-at-home mom, and I'm also a birth keeper, which is similar to a doula. It's a little bit different. And I'm a childbirth educator and a home birth and free birth advocate. And my page is filled with either maybe sides of birth that people haven't considered before, and or exposing the reality of obstetric violence, which is something that's very near and dear to my heart. So
yes,
that's what I'm up to.
The work that you're doing is so important. And honestly, it's so inspiring. It really is. Because I think one thing that I've noticed more and more when it comes to the birth space is that A, people are like afraid to talk about these things because they either don't know enough about them because they've never seen like what natural birth is, or because like what we talked about already, they are full-blown people pleasers and they don't want to step out of line to upset anybody. But at the end of the day, if when it comes to birth, you know, like, you're not just protecting yourself and educating yourself so you can make the decisions that you feel most comfortable with and what's best for you and what's best for your baby, but you're also protecting your baby. And so, especially when it comes to obstetric violence, people don't want to talk about that. Like, nobody wants to discuss that. And it's kind of like what we're dealing with in the world right now. People would rather just turn a blind eye to it and pretend like it's not happening. And it's like, no, the people like you and I and people who are in this space are the ones who are essentially making everybody pay attention to it. I'm sorry if you don't want to. At this point, it's honestly like you're just being ignorant if you're not paying attention to it. But when I first got into the birth space, when I took a birth and postpartum doula trainings, I started attending birth. That's what really started waking me up to how profit-driven everything is and how disgusting the world that we live in is, and is one of the main reasons why I am where I am right now. And like, I will never give birth in a hospital again unless it's like 1,000% medically necessary. So yeah, it's just, we have to start somewhere and we have to be the role models for our kids because they watch every single thing that we do.
Well, yeah. And it's not, I mean, going back to like the, you're not just protecting yourself or your experience that you'll have to replay in your head every single day that impacts every aspect of your mothering experience and how you view yourself. That is reason alone.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then the trauma that your baby is carrying and that their children will then carry, like, especially our daughters going into birth themselves as adults in the future.
Yes.
And it was on Mom Mindfully's page, Annie's page, that she was posting about where we learn about birth.
I was just like, going to say that.
The influences, yeah. And it was funny because right when she was posting it, I had been thinking about it like the day before. It was really funny. But that we learn about birth from the people around us as the secondary way that we learn about birth. And we learn about birth primarily through our own birth.
Right.
So if it's extremely traumatic, which almost all of birth today is extremely traumatic, mm-hmm. whether or not a woman would describe it as such is not really the point. Like if she thinks that her birth was great, like then I'm not going to say, no, it wasn't.
Right.
And still you can say, oh, it was great because I walked away with a healthy baby.
Right.
You know, which is a defense mechanism. And I would argue that essentially all women who have been engaged in the system to give birth have been traumatized and abused.
To some extent. Absolutely. Some of them are, it's like a range. You know what I mean? Yeah. And that's the thing absolutely. That I get so fired up about is just that like people just don't understand that like before people gave birth in hospitals, like since the beginning of time, women have been giving birth outside of hospitals. That just mm-hmm. started coming in. And I was like doing research. I'm going to be sharing more about it soon, but I was doing research on like what birth was like for like our grandmothers and our mothers mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. And then it's just wild to me that so many women are robbed of what birth can really be. Mm-hmm. And they're coerced and they're bullied and they're abused even before the baby, even before they're in labor. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Mm-hmm. And so they're fully robbed of that experience of what birth can be and that all the oxytocin for them and their baby and the bonding for them and their baby. Alicia had just posted about that, like not feeling connected with your baby after birth is not normal. Mm-hmm. It's not normal. Mm-hmm. And it makes me so, so sad and also so, so angry because women don't realize how badass they are. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like that's being taken away from women every single time a woman gives birth in a hospital with a provider who doesn't provide her with true informed consent and who they're just not aware of what birth could be. And then the trauma piece, like you were talking about, I was listening to the Ellen Fisher podcast and it was talking about biohacking your brain and your memories and emotional trauma that gets carried from generation to generation and how it literally shows up in your DNA. So people don't realize.
Like basically the premise of epigenetics, right?
Yes.
And so, yeah.
Yeah, they had done a study on the Holocaust survivors and then their grandchildren and their great-grandchildren and the trauma from the Holocaust survivors was showing up in their great-grandchildren's DNA. Like that is insane. That is something mm-hmm. that every single person should realize. Like trauma is real. Trauma happens. And a lot of the time we spend so much of our life not processing that trauma because we're told that we can't talk about it. We can't do this. We can't do that. Mm-hmm. So I would love to have a conversation similar to like what you talked about on your podcast with people pleasing and how we as parents need to be that role model for our kids and need to be encouraging them to express their emotions. And so like before we hopped on the podcast, we started talking about sleep training and I want to like get into a real in-depth conversation about that right now and just like be real about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I, had gotten into a conversation with a friend who basically said, you know, if sleep training works, then what's the problem? Mm-hmm. And the way that she was doing it was not, you know, full blown, cry it out, shut the door at 8 p.m. Don't come back till 8 a.m. the next morning. It was like the gentle, whatever that means.
Yeah.
Like where you have a sheet of paper that tells you when to respond to your baby.
Right. Type of sleep training.
And she was, yeah, essentially like, well, but if it works, then what's the big deal? And I was like, well, it depends on what you mean by works. Mm-hmm. If your goal is for there to be a sleeping baby in a crib, then sure, sleep training will probably work to some extent for some families. It flat out will not work for some families. And it simultaneously ignores biological norms, like a child's brain being physiologically incapable of de-stressing itself. Mm-hmm. The infant brain is designed to be co-regulated by a mature brain. They can't de-escalate their own stress hormones.
Right. Which many people don't know. Like, they do not understand that concept.
Right. So, yeah, there's, like, that they flat out are incapable of doing that. But then it also masks what could be some really significant health problems in a child.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there was one post that I read where a mom was like, this is one of the reasons why I'm against sleep training, because my daughter was crying in her crib and I wanted to go to her. And then my, you know, quote unquote, rational brain was like, oh, she needs to learn how to self-soothe. And the mom went against that, went with her gut, and the daughter went in and she had a poopy diaper.
Mm-hmm.
And if she had listened to the messages of don't go in there, because she's going to learn that you're going to come in,
mm-hmm.
which is actually the goal
right.
in life. Like, attachment is the work of parenthood. That's right. what it is.
Mm-hmm.
That's your only job is to go in.
Yeah, I was just talking about this. I haven't released the episode yet, but I was just talking about this with my friend Kelsey, who is a perinatal social worker. Mm. And we were specifically talking about sleep training, and we were talking about how we are literally hardwired to respond to our babies. And if it were mammals in the wild and they didn't respond to their babies when their baby was crying and their baby was not near them, their baby would get eaten by a predator, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't understand. I've never understood this huge push for independence for our babies. I've just never understood where it came from. And it's all profit driven. Like, mm-hmm. all of these products, like the Snoo, wouldn't exist without it, you know? And it's truly mind-blowing to me. Like, your baby's crying for a reason. They're mm-hmm. not crying for no freaking reason. That's the only way they have to communicate with you. If you're responding to them all freaking day, and then you put them in a dark room by themselves and leave them there all night, could you imagine how confusing that would be? As an adult, like, imagine, this is the other part that gets me, is if it's your husband, right? If you were responding to your husband all day long, or he was responding to you all day long, and then he just put you in a room, or you put him in a room, and you're like, talk to you tomorrow, how would you feel?
Well, and against your desire.
Right.
It's not like the baby desires to be sleep trained.
Exactly.
No baby desires to be sleep trained.
No.
All babies desire response and need response.
Right. And they go from being in your womb 24/7, listening to your heartbeat. I came across recently, I was going through some of my photos, and I think I had posted about it last year, and then I recently reshared it, but I didn't talk about the extinction method, because someone had shared, I'm in a doula group on for Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
And someone had shared that this family was doing the extinction method with their 10-week-old baby. And the doula was like, I have been telling them this is not okay. Like, not okay. And for anyone who's listening, the extinction method is literally when you leave your baby with nothing, literally nothing surrounding them in a room by themselves. And they could scream and cry until they throw up or whatever, and you just leave them there for a 10-week-old baby.
That's abuse.
It's abuse. It's like full-blown abuse. Like, that is neglect. Yeah. You're neglecting your child. So anyone who doesn't want to hear that, or anyone who's triggered by hearing that, I'm not sorry for saying it, because it is.
Yeah, because it's just the truth.
It's the truth. And, I mean, I don't think I said this on the other podcast, but it's like, if you don't want to respond to your baby, you shouldn't have kids. Like, that might be a very bold statement, but if you're not going to be actively responding to your baby throughout their life at all different stages of their life, if you're just going to be leaving them alone to sort through their emotions by themselves, you shouldn't have children.
Right, which is part of the whole baby doll culture conversation that I was having with Alicia mm-hmm. over on our podcast, which will be coming out next week.
Can't wait to listen.
And that's, yeah, baby doll culture is what we call it. Like, just this thing that isn't really intelligent, you know, to be picked up when you want to, maybe for a picture or when it's convenient or to show off.
Like an accessory.
Like an accessory. Mm-hmm. And then you can just put it down whenever, and it's not really necessary to take with you. And it can definitely be an inconvenience to your real life. Mm-hmm. And like all of these things. And it's really, really harmful. And children definitely pick up on their parents communicating to them that they are an inconvenience.
Yes, wholeheartedly.
Because they don't distinguish their feelings from their behavior, because their behavior is communication.
Right.
So all they're communicating is that they're needed, and that communication is ignored.
I know. It makes me so sad. And then I just think about trauma and how it stems from, like, before babies are even born. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it's within the mother. Mm-hmm. And from her mother and from the grandmother. Mm-hmm. And then say the mother has a traumatic birth. And then from there, you are dealing with your baby. And so if your baby's already feeling that trauma, like down to their core, already dealing with it, then they come into the world and they're ignored the whole time. It makes me so sad, like deep down to my core, for babies to be ignored and for people to just pretend. I had never actually heard the phrase baby doll culture until you had talked about it recently. And it really made me think about it. And I do feel that there are a lot of people who have babies specifically just like more as like, okay, this is part of life. Like you get married or you go to college, you get married, you have kids, that sort of thing. And then they have babies as like an, okay, like I did this, but they don't do the like emotional work, the internal work that they need to do. Mm-hmm. And some people choose to once they become parents, but some people just continue on with their life. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know, man, I'm just in a space where I'm like, there's so many people that have so much healing to do, myself included. Healing is lifelong. It's not mm-hmm. something that like, comes, it just is, you're not just magically healed one day. Mm-hmm. And so when it comes to kids, I've just been thinking about like the trauma that's already there. Then you do, say you do sleep training, then you're not responding to your kid at all if you are not following responsive parenting in any way as they grow up. Mm-hmm. And then how that ties into people pleasing. If you're just mm-hmm. telling them what to do all the time and you're not allowing them to share how they really feel, share their emotions, they're just going to do whatever anyone tells them to do. They're not going to mm-hmm. think for themselves. They're not going to tell someone no. They're not going to stand up for what they believe. And they're just going to go along with the crowd. Mm-hmm. And I think about
And at what cost?
Right. I think about like how confusing that is from like our parents telling us, oh, if everybody was jumping off a bridge, would you do it? And they would always say, no, you wouldn't. But we literally live in a culture right now where that's what everyone's doing. Mm-hmm. Not everyone. There's some people who aren't. But this is the important thing about raising kids is like you want to raise them to use their brains. You want to raise mm-hmm. them to be able to express their emotions so they don't have to do all the internal work when they're parents. Mm-hmm. You know, I find myself doing that now. But then I think about the fact that my parents and their parents, that generational trauma is real. And like, my parents aren't even working through theirs, you know, mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. or they're just starting to. I don't really know. I don't know where mm-hmm. they're at, but mm-hmm. I don't want a whole generation of other kids to have to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And with our parents' trauma, most people's parents have gone through a lot of generational trauma and
like physical very abuse few too. Of them.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Both my parents, for sure. And not everyone is actively working on it.
Yeah.
And part of that is a trauma response that yes. facing that your parents hurt you is painful.
Right.
You know, and some trauma is straight up intolerable to a human brain.
I know.
Like, can't talk about it, can't face it. And I'm sure that's most of why people aren't able, willing, ready, all the things to talk about some of these hard truths. And I think about stuff like circumcision, vaccines, sleep training, all of the things that, you know, parents tend to kind of be on one side about.
Mm-hmm.
And if a man was circumcised and vaccinated and sleep trained, or, you know, only one of those things, or it was a woman who was two of those things or whatever, their ability to see that what was done to them when they were babies was harmful or caused lasting damage is not something that everyone is really able to wrap their heads around.
Right.
To think, especially with the circumcision thing, because that's like tangible, permanent, actual damage
mm-hmm.
to your body. Like for a man to sit there and be like, wow, my parents like paid someone to cut skin off of my penis. Like to just sit and say that, you know, and mm-hmm. like, oh, all of these things that I thought were normal about being an uncircumcised man are actually really not normal, you know, or having my body I thought was normal and it's not, or, you know, any of the illnesses that someone could contract from a vaccine or emotional issues from being sleep trained, you mm-hmm. know, it's all very, very painful. And I don't have like judgment for individual people not able to see it.
Right. Yeah. That's kind of like, it's like when you start realizing these things, because they're now being discussed, right? But
right.
in previous generations, it was just like, you do what you do and automatic, that's just it. Yeah. And now they're being discussed. And like you said, some people just literally like just can't.
Yeah.
And so for us, I feel like we're in a spot right now where it's like we are willing and able to unlearn and like relearn and learn new things and have be open to doing that. But I get like what you're saying with other generations that just like they're like, no way. Like there's no freaking way
yeah.
that everything I've known my entire life is not true.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's kind of like it's like being the sober person when everybody else is drunk. Like, and that's, I think, one of the best analogies that I've thought of, because when you are spending the time being a responsive parent and doing the internal work and healing, then you start like better understanding mm-hmm. all of the issues that you've dealt with, that your parents have dealt with, that your friends have dealt with, that your husband has dealt with. And you're just like, holy shit. And that's why I want to have these conversations and just be no bullshit. Like, this is what we're here to talk about mm-hmm. because we want to help other people avoid dealing with this. And mm-hmm. this is not to say that you're never going to have any trauma in your life. You know what I mean? Like, there are going right. to be things that happen that you have zero control over. This is not saying you can live your life trauma-free. This is just saying that there are certain things that you can be mindful of, especially when you're a parent and you have control over what happens to your child. Mm-hmm. And the decisions that you make for them
mm-hmm.
and how they grow up.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I totally found that to be true. Like when my oldest was a baby and I found Taylor Kulik's page.
Yes.
And I was just like, oh my gosh, like there's nothing wrong with him. He's totally, completely normal. And he just needs me, you know? And like, it's just, ever since his birth been like this continuous cyclical, you know, road of healing, like from my childhood. And I'm sure a lot of that has to do with my mom's childhood and even down to things like her birth, you know, of yeah. course, because I think that our each generation's grandmother's births mm-hmm. are impacting like literally their day-to-day lives.
Yes.
And our children's too. Yeah. Because we're all, I mean, it's a bloodline for a reason. Like we are chemically related to these people. There's no way that the trauma that they hold in their body, you know, my grandma being told that she wasn't wanted when she was a child, like, and then, you know, basically living her entire life, like no one could ever actually truly just want her
yeah.
like everything has to have the caveat, everything is a competition, you know, whatever issues people deal with, all because when she was four, her grandfather told her that she wasn't wanted. You know, like, it's just, it's, and then it, you know, goes all the way down, because then implicitly she communicated to her kids that at least certain aspects of who they are were not wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And how much better my childhood was compared to my mom's, and still, like, looking back at that and being like, holy crap, like, we went through some stuff as kids, like, and yeah, like, just actively almost keeping a running list of things that I don't want to have my children exposed to.
Yeah. And I think also too, one thing that I've realized for how I show up as a mom, like, there were times where, there was one time specifically where, like, I realized that I was literally, like, acting like my mom. And I was like, mm-hmm. this is not who I want to be. This is mm-hmm. not how I want to parent. This is not, this is not what I want. And so mm-hmm. I went and I sat down and I took a breath, or a few, and I came back and I was like, I am so sorry mm-hmm. for being, like, raising my voice and being frustrated like that. That was not a response that you deserved. I was feeling frustrated. I was feeling overwhelmed. And I was like, I am so sorry. I am going to be working better and, like, figuring out why that triggers me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's so wild, because then I even think about, like, when you were talking about your grandmother's birth, your mom's birth, like, I asked my grandmother about her births. And, like, it was during the time where, I don't know if you're familiar with, like, Twilight Sleep and, like, mm-hmm. all this stuff that they did mm-hmm. to women. Oh, my God. And mm-hmm. so she, like, doesn't remember. Like, she mm-hmm. literally does not remember. And
yeah,
then,
I have a whole highlight on my page for anybody who would want to go look at it. It's called The Past.
Yeah.
And that's all it is submissions about you know, people on my page saying, oh, it was my mom's birth or my husband's grandma's birth. You know, any woman that they're related to or have talked to. And some of them were really
horrible.
Really heavy.
Really, really heavy. And, like, I didn't realize that. And then I was talking to my mom last year at some point, and she told me about my brother's birth and how horrible it was. And I never knew. And I remember when I was pregnant, she was, like, very, very concerned about what my birth was going to be like, and I couldn't understand why. And that was why. But she did not tell me. And, like, she's processing that now. Like, I'm 31, and she's just now telling me about it. So it's, like, trauma is real. It's so real. And it's just, this is why I want to talk about the things that seem controversial, mm-hmm. you know, because mothers don't understand that this impacts everyone on every single level. Not only does it impact you down to your DNA, but it literally, the way you parent impacts every single relationship that your child will ever have with anybody.
Mm-hmm. And themselves.
Yes. Who they are, what they believe about themselves, how they feel about themselves, everything, literally mm-hmm. everything. And that's why it's like, when I get so fired up about these things, it's because I just can't understand how people don't care. I just, but again, that comes down to if they feel they need to heal, if they can heal, if they're willing to do the work, if they even see anything wrong with, mm-hmm. with how they're showing up,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah. And actively pursuing healing in any context requires an admission that you are unwell.
Yes.
Recognition, admission, and a decision to do better,
right.
or to change, or to do different, or to do, you know, do whatever it is that you feel is the right thing to heal from what happened before.
Right.
But there's no way to heal a broken leg if you're still walking around on it, denying that it's broken.
Right.
Like, no, there's literally no way to heal that. Or if it were to heal itself, it would heal improperly, you
right.
know, and it would still require actual attention and intention to heal it.
And I think even in what you just said right there is just like being responsible and taking responsibility for yourself and for your healing, and like actually acknowledging that you're not a perfect human being, mm-hmm. and that you have shit that you need to deal with. Mm-hmm. And I think that honestly applies to the current state of the world too. Like, mm-hmm. you taking care of your health is your responsibility. You mm-hmm. raising your children to take care of themselves and providing them with the tools and resources that they need so they can understand their bodies and how they work and how they function and what they can do to help them or what will potentially hurt them. And this, again, ties back into birth too. Like, believing in your God-given body, believing that you are capable of things, you know? Mm-hmm. And even when it comes down to, like, needing medical help, yes, of course. Sometimes that happens. And we've said that many times when we're talking about mm-hmm. birth. Mm-hmm. But, like, yes, of course there are going to be times where you do need medical intervention. Mm-hmm. But if you are spending your day-to-day life being mindful of the choices that you're making when it comes to your health, mm-hmm. that is one of the most important things that you can ever do.
Mm-hmm. And that for 95, I would say, percent of women giving birth, the hospital is just about the most dangerous place you could be.
Yes. You know, what is his name? Marsden Wagner. Do you remember him? Mm-hmm. He was talking about it in The Business of Being Born. And for anyone who's listening and who has not watched that, please go watch it. If you are pregnant, not pregnant yet, know someone who's pregnant, please go watch that.
But I want to add something to that, though, in the go watch it. Yes. I agree. Go watch it. And there's still, it's not 100% in my opinion.
Yes. Oh,
but
no.
And nothing is ever going to be 100%. But one of the biggest problems I have with it is that at the end, a particular woman that they've been following for a while in her pregnancy goes in to have a C-section because her baby's breech. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, but the whole point of this documentary is that they're making a business out of normal birth mm-hmm. and breech is normal.
Yeah. The only
and
reason.
So, like, that participation in the thing that they're exposing was very, very strange for me. But
it was. I wholeheartedly agree. The only reason I had thought about it was because you'd said that hospitals are essentially dangerous to birth, because he said if you want to have a humanized birth, get the hell away from a hospital. And that's so valid. But like you said, then it goes to, okay, if you want to have a normal birth, stay away from a hospital, but your baby's breech, okay, go have a C-section.
Exactly.
So,
and like, oh, they'll do all kinds of things to make sure that you end up with a C-section. Mm-hmm. Like pathologized breech, like that was very confusing to me, that she was going in and I was just kind of watching it like, wait, what
just happened?
But yeah, and one of the things that they talked about, you know, when they interviewed a whole bunch of nurses at once, like, when was the last time you saw a woman give birth without Pitocin or an epidural? And they all just kind of like looked at each other. Mm-hmm. Like, normal birth does not belong in the hospital for a reason.
Yeah. I kind of wish. So I had, my birth was in a birth center within a hospital. And the only reason I did it was because of my daughter's dad and what he felt comfortable with. Mm-hmm. Going back, I would not have done that. But right. I like genuinely would love to talk to like the nurses who were there and be like, how often do you see this type of mm-hmm. thing? Because I had mm-hmm. midwives and I didn't have any, it was unmedicated, but I think that's genuinely because I had taken both of my trainings before becoming pregnant and while I was pregnant, so I advocated for myself from the beginning and they knew, and I was like, any midwife who you meet, put it in my notes that like, I'm not doing this, I'm not doing that, I'm not doing this, just so anyone who comes in knows that I'm not doing any of those mm-hmm. things. And mm-hmm. but then I always think about that, how many labor and delivery nurses have literally never seen what birth can really look like. So then mm-hmm. when you think about all of the policies that they have in place, like, oh, this is standard protocol when it comes to birth, that's not what birth is. That's yeah. not like, and the variations of birth too, like every single woman has a different birth. Every single mm-hmm. one. There's not one birth that is ever the same as another. And mm-hmm. so to just put this one size fits all, okay, these are our protocols, these are our policies when it comes mm-hmm. to birth, it just drives me so mental. And it makes me sad for the labor and delivery nurses. But they also could realize that that's not what it is, and they could do research outside of that. So mm-hmm. that's where I feel like I run into issues with people who, like, I think we talked about this, people who come and leave comments or come and, like, leave us kind messages about how much they disagree mm-hmm. with what we're sharing. And it's like, okay, that's fine. You can disagree with what we're sharing, mm-hmm. but this is factual information. Mm-hmm. So
even if what you're arguing against is my opinion.
Yeah.
Like, what is there to, what conversation is there to be had here?
Right.
Yeah.
It's like that. Who shared that post? The one that, I don't know if, I think it was on, I have to go back and find it, but it was talking about the language when it comes to, like, how women are spoken to versus, like, what it would be like if we changed that for men. Someone mm-hmm. just shared it yesterday.
It was on my story.
I had shared it too.
Try to find, like, the original account that it was on.
Yeah. But it was talking about how just, like, the language, like, they were talking mm-hmm. about, like, geriatric pregnancies mm-hmm. or incompetent
cervix.
Yes. And so that, I think, is so valid. Like, mm-hmm. so, so valid. Like, if we ever, like, what do you think would be a good example of that? Like, for, like, men who deal with erectile dysfunction, right? Like, you have an incompetent penis. Yeah. You know? Like, if that was ever said to a man.
And for, yeah, and for men to be told that on an ongoing basis.
Constantly. Like, and yeah, that every yeah. single part of them was wrong. Like, I feel like, I know I kind of just hopped into that, but I just remembered that yesterday in terms of, like, what happens in the birth space and how women are spoken to throughout their pregnancy, because trauma is not just, like, the physical part. A lot yeah. of it is the emotional part.
Yeah.
You know, the way you're spoken to, whether you're bullied, whether you're just told what you need to do when it's your body. It's just, like,
and even the language, the system is...
Oh, I found it. Yeah.
Misogynist at its core. That's what it is. That's what it's founded on, is right. the rape and torture of women, mm-hmm. and particularly women of color.
Yes.
So if everybody could just understand that, just accept it, then there would be a whole lot less defense of the system and participation in the system. So even down to things like, if a woman comes to her provider with a concern about either the way she was treated or something that's happening with her body right now, it's considered a complaint.
Right.
She's complaining.
Or they're a difficult
patient. She's
sitting there
running her mouth. Yeah, they're just basically, like, whining is the language. And what's interesting about that, that piece about, you know, bringing something to your care provider and how it's received, it was on the Fertility Friday podcast, but they were talking about the discrepancy in consistent treatment. So for the example that was provided was that this woman had all of the symptoms of endometriosis, mm-hmm. which doctors, especially OBGYNs, even though it's their specialty, know almost nothing about endometriosis.
Right.
Which is fascinating. Like, I mean, obstetricians don't know anything about actual birth because that's not their specialty.
Their specialty is surgery.
Like, mm-hmm. that's fine. That's your job. That's great. Go do it and do it well. You don't know anything about birth. Mm-hmm. So with the endometriosis example, the woman, I think it was the host herself, was saying that she checked all the boxes, symptoms for endometriosis, except one of them is painful sex, and she wasn't having sex. She was not, like, sexually active at that time. So she didn't check that box, essentially. And they were like, oh, well, you don't have all the symptoms.
Because of that one thing.
Because of that. That is actually very subjective. Like, painful sex for one woman, like, might, you know,
could
even if she's as inflamed as another, might not be painful. So, like, that is all insane for sure. And then interestingly, with stuff like PCOS, if a skinny woman comes in, checks all the symptoms of PCOS, she's going to be told, well, you don't have it because you're not overweight. And then the flip side is if an overweight woman comes in and checks all the boxes, they're going to be told, well, if you just lose weight, like all of your
problems
will go away. Yeah. It's just, it's so bad. And like we were talking about on my podcast with people pleasing, that is why women still go back.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're constantly told from the time that we're literally newborns that our problems don't matter to people.
Aren't real, or we're just complaining.
Yeah, you're just complaining, you're just running your mouth, not my problem.
Like, well, that makes me think about, what is that? Did you watch Pregnant in America? Have you watched that?
No.
I remember I watched all of these when I was pregnant. I don't know if that was the one. Oh, I can't remember his name. It's going to make it frustrating. His wife, a black woman, was saying that she did not feel well after the birth of her son and continued to say it. And her husband went and told the nurses, went and told everybody over and over and over again. And they were just like, oh, it's just afterbirth stuff, you know, and she ended up dying. And I need to find this because it's upsetting me. I can't remember their names. But that just goes to show. So we already knew that there's serious issues within the maternal healthcare system with women in general, but also women of color. And so how do we get people to realize how serious this is? And then how do we also get people to like advocate for people who are trying to advocate for themselves and people just aren't listening to them? And I think, again, what it comes back down to is just like staying away from hospitals unless you like really, really, really need to be there. Because I think about it all the time in regards to what you just said, like OBs do not know, many, many of them do not know what natural and physiological birth looks like. And then even I was thinking about it in October and I hadn't really posted anything about it, but like they're talking about like raising money for cancer research and X, Y, and Z. Why is nobody talking about the things that we can do to prevent cancer? Why is nobody discussing that?
Because you can't make money off of, you know, being healthy.
Boom. Seriously. And I think about that all the time because I was recently talking to a young woman whose mother just got diagnosed with cancer, and she has been going to her appointments with her mom because she's very holistic minded and she's listening to these doctors speak and she is just astounded because not only are they saying, oh yeah, the medication that we put you on probably made your cancer like 10 times more aggressive. And then also sitting there at the same time saying that supplements are not helpful, saying that diet and nutrition are not helpful. And it's literally like, you are doing such a disservice to people. And that's what makes me so angry. And not for nothing, like there are doctors who do genuinely care, but there are very few of them.
And good intentions only get you so far.
Right.
Like if you're still a part of the system, you're still a drug peddler, you're still gaslighting the shit out of people.
I just remember growing up, like one of my very best friends has cystic fibrosis and I would go to the hospital very often to be with her and spend time with her. And I remember looking at the menu of like what they have to offer kids who are in the hospital. It's a bunch of shit. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, so you're trying to like help them heal from all of these surgeries and X, Y, and Z, but you're not providing them with the nutrition that they need for their bodies to heal.
You're giving them like pudding and juice and pudding, chicken
juice,
nuggets, like
cereal. And they're like, oh yeah, whatever you can eat. And it's like, okay, but if they were eating these things, could their cancer have been prevented? Could their illness have started to heal itself? If they were, I don't know. I go on tangents and rampages about it because it's just like, it is mind blowing to me that like being as young as you and I are, that we're sitting here thinking about these things. And other people are just like, nope, that's just how it is. Like, no one talks about the rising cancer rates. Nobody talks about the rising heart disease rates. Nobody talks about, like, especially now, within the past 2 years, I just have such a low tolerance for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, come on, guys. Like, you gotta at some point wake up.
Get it together. Yeah. Well, and I think that, like we talked about, so I'll just share quickly here a summary of what happened a couple of days ago when we decided to do this podcast. I had gotten a message from an old friend, and he was upset about some stuff that I was posting. And I think that, I mean, it was COVID stuff, like I'll just say it. I know for a fact that when the state of Washington locked down, he did not leave his house essentially for 3 months. And he even, for periods of time, if he thought that he had the potential to be exposed, would quarantine himself from his roommates. So he lived essentially completely alone indoors for 3 months, terrified of death or of his family dying. Like, very, very real, legitimate, crippling fear.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel really bad for him. Like, I'm not judging his fear or his reaction or his defensiveness over what I posted or any of those things. Like, I understand how terrified he was. Yeah, I just wanted to share that. I forgot where I was going with that. I'm not gonna lie.
No, we were talking about just like how we can't understand how people don't see it at this point.
Yeah.
Because
I think that's pretty much it. Is like he can't see it, doesn't want to see it, you know. I don't really know, but it's not really my responsibility to not tell the truth just because it's gonna upset someone, you know. It's actually my responsibility to tell the truth regardless, but
right.
But
I mean, that ties back into the whole shame thing, right? It ties back into, yeah, if you're triggered by something that I share, that doesn't mean I'm shaming you.
Right.
If you are triggered by it, why are you triggered by it? Right. Why are you saying that someone is shaming you? Why are you on the internet finding someone who you don't know, or maybe you do know them, and deliberately going on their posts and saying, you are shaming me?
Right.
When they did not say, this is for you, I'm shaming you specifically. Why are you doing that? Someone who you don't know, or going on and like attacking somebody for having a different opinion than you, mm-hmm, or attacking them for sharing factual information.
Mm-hmm.
And it all comes back down to the healing that needs to be done, that people just can't see, don't want to see,
mm-hmm,
or taking responsibility for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a combination of both.
Yeah. Well, and with that friend who was really upset about what I was posting, my point in posting on my story, basically the guy was saying, like, this is a slippery slope and I can tell where we're headed if we don't get it together and end this.
Right.
And that was what you were saying about older generations just being like, oh, well, yeah, can't really do anything about it. I guess it's fine. Like, they didn't have the foresight to look into the future 50 years and be like, holy crap.
Right.
Like, this is not okay. Like, we don't have the luxury of throwing our hands up in the air and being like, yeah, well, I guess, you know, whatever happens. Like, this is literally the world that we're leaving for our kids.
Yeah.
And we have some clarity enough to see that it's going to be really bad if we don't do something about it, mm-hmm, right freaking now. And about the shame thing, it reminded me that I see it particularly in conversations about birth and conversations about breastfeeding.
Yeah.
And those are almost entirely because the woman's desires were not respected, were not supported. And then she is still left to clean up the pieces. And so anyone who's showing up, who she feels is saying, look, this is your fault, of course she's going to say, no, it's freaking not.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that the person saying, this is a problem, birth trauma is a problem, sabotaged births and sabotaged breastfeeding relationships are a problem, is not the same thing as saying, why did you choose, you know, to have a C-section?
Yes.
When, you know, when you had this insane cascade of interventions and it was forced on you, mm-hmm. and then you were separated from your child for 7 hours and never got your milk and couldn't breastfeed because your daughter had a tongue tie and like all of these things. And then this poor, broken, horrified, traumatized woman is scrolling Instagram and somebody's talking about formula companies targeting yeah. traumatized mothers, and she thinks she's being shamed.
I know. It's, it just like literally brings up a rage in me that I can't even explain.
Oh yeah.
And
like, I'm sure my husband is so tired of hearing of that by now, except that he's like still completely like 100% engaged. And like, if I go out there right now and like bring any aspect of this up again, he's going to be like, totally there for it. But yeah, I mean, it's all just like, so it can be really, really overwhelming. And I think that that is where the responsibility component comes in on our quote unquote side of the issue, as somebody who does get it a little bit more and has, like I said, a little bit more clarity.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to claim that I like have wisdom, you know, that other people just don't have. Like, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that even with seeing things the way that I see them, it's still not my responsibility to force somebody to hear it who doesn't want to hear it.
True. Absolutely.
And that's why I told that guy who was responding about the COVID stuff, like, you can unfollow me.
Yes.
I'm not here for you. Maybe you don't want to hear what I have to say, and I'm not here for you.
Yeah.
I'm here for people who do want to hear it.
That's the thing, too, that within our society nowadays, that's just, like, literally no matter what you say, someone is going to be triggered by it. You cannot, and again, this ties back into the people-pleasing thing like we were talking about. You can't live your life based on like feeling comfortable with sharing or not sharing something just because you're concerned about what someone else is going to think. Because then you're not being yourself, first and foremost. And second of all, then you're living your life to people-please everybody, and you're never going to be able to please everybody. It is impossible to please everybody. So it's just like, oh, you just have to, A, educate yourself and pay attention to what's going on. Talk about what matters to you, because you also never know if someone has been like watching your stories or reading your posts and like genuinely did not know these things. Because I think I mentioned this to someone that I was speaking to recently, like our parents weren't able to just Google something, you know?
Right.
So like we have access to all of these things now that previous generations didn't. And
yeah.
So we are we have the opportunity right now to talk about these things, to share these things with other people, and to hopefully have other people begin implementing them within their own lives. And mm-hmm. even if we don't know you, even if we're sharing something that is relatable to you in some way, or you've been feeling alone, or you've been feeling frustrated, like you're not alone. There are people who go through this. And I think that's why we need to have these difficult conversations. We shouldn't have to normalize them, but we do need to normalize them, because everything that we're talking about is seen as like so radical, like so, so radical. And I honestly too, like when it comes to this stuff, if somebody comes on to like my post or something and they're like, oh, especially when it comes to like sleep training and responding to your baby, like, oh, you're shaming me X, Y, and Z. I just think about like, I do get triggered in some regard, because I think about myself and like what I dealt with being a new mom, but I don't attack them. I'm like, I'm sharing this because I dealt with this as a new mom, and this is how I handled it, because mm-hmm. I took the time to educate myself and realize how important it was for my mental, emotional, physical health, but also for my daughter. Mm-hmm. And so when people come on and they're like, oh, I did sleep training with my baby and they're fine. Are they fine though?
And how would you know?
What does fine mean? Because
fine.
What I see in my own family, in other family members, is I see a lot of people who have suppressed their emotions their entire life, who do not talk about their emotions, who are just like, are struggling. That's what I see. And a lot of them, if not all of them, myself included, went through sleep training at some point.
Well, and that's like the interesting thing. I was talking to my husband about it a couple weeks ago in the like, well, but my baby turned out fine. Like, but only now are we seeing adults whose generation was sleep trained. Like, my grandma didn't know that sleep training was a thing until my mom was having kids.
Right.
Which is really when it, like, started. I mean, I guess it may have started trending when my mom's generation was born, but it wasn't really, like, culturally implemented.
Right.
At least where my mom was growing up. Like, that was just wasn't really a thing, even if doctors were recommending it the same way that they recommend all kinds of things. But, yeah, I mean, we're seeing now adults who are sleep trained, and generally, modern adults are not okay.
Yeah.
Like, how can you say, oh, but my baby turned out fine? Like, your baby's two.
Right. How do you know?
You don't know what they're going to be like as an adult. And I would argue that our generation is very, very not okay.
Yeah, and I also find it interesting that the people who have come on to my post, specifically when it comes to do with sleep training, I've shared that I was like, I'm a single mother now, and I still respond to my baby, and I work, and I don't leave them to cry it out. And it's interesting because they come on to my post saying that I'm shaming them, but then it turns into, oh, well, I'm happily married and I have a career that I love and I feel pity for you. And it's just, it's so backwards to me because I'm like, I have not insulted you. I knew nothing about what you did with your baby, literally nothing. I just shared the fact that it's biologically harmful to them. And then you started attacking who I was. You know nothing about me, literally nothing about my life. And you're telling me that you pity me. And it's just you came on to.
That's so preposterous.
But she literally was just like, I'm here to like uplift the women who have chosen to do this. And I'm like, okay, so you are telling me that you support women who choose what you do while at the same time trying to make me feel bad about myself. It's just like, I was like literally laughing. Like, it's just, it's so backwards.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and people's own confirmation bias getting in the way of like, but it's still objectively true. What I said is still objectively true. Even if you don't think that your baby is traumatized, even if your baby's not traumatized. And that's the thing about sleep training is that anybody who says yes across the board, every single baby will be emotionally, you know, stunted and become a serial killer. Like, that's not what we're saying.
Yes.
We're saying that it's harmful.
Right.
Because it is. And every brain processes trauma differently. Trauma is actually the reaction to the harmful experience.
Right.
And it's also a complete lie to say that sleep training is not traumatizing, because it absolutely is. And just because everybody is different doesn't mean that it's safe or even a good idea. And that what you said earlier about, you know, every birth is different and we don't know what we don't know until after the birth, that is really reminded me of this quote. It's Gail Tully. I think she's like the spinning babies lady.
Oh, yeah.
But she was like, we can know as much as we know about birth and still don't know about this individual birth until it plays out.
Right.
And yeah, just this idea of somebody like shaming you for just saying what they believe is true. And even going back to like the confirmation bias, I posted this thing on ultrasounds that they're wrong just as often as they're right. They carry objective harm.
Right.
And they're used as tools to coerce women into doing things that are completely unnecessary.
Yeah.
And this woman responded to the thing on my story, and she began her DM with, actually, I was like, oh, excuse me. and she went on to say that the only woman that she's ever met that that had an ultrasound that resulted in like a negative diagnosis, you know, that woman's baby was only saved because of what they did when they found that on the ultrasound. I was like, yeah, that's great. My point is that it derails more births than it helps.
Right.
And she was like, oh, well, no friends or family that I know had their birth plans changed at all based on what was seen on an ultrasound. I was like, I first of all don't believe that. You don't know one single woman who went in for an ultrasound at 39 weeks and they found that she had low fluid and she went in for an induction, or any of the 500,000 crap like that they literally just pull out of their butts. Like, it doesn't exist. It's not a thing. And you're using it to tell women that if they don't do it, they're going to have a dead baby. So there's that. I flat out don't believe that. Even if you don't know that the woman's experience went that way, that doesn't mean it didn't. And also what I said to her before I eventually just like ended the conversation was, I understand your point is that their birth plans weren't changed. Right. And if their birth plan was to have a ton of interventions, then the ultrasound still filled that purpose.
Right.
Which is to frighten women and make them believe that they need medical attention.
It just,
like, that's, it still stands. And agree with her narrative or her perspective. So she DM'd me and said, actually,
excuse me. I remember when I only got one ultrasound when I was pregnant, and I remember they were like, oh, do you want to do the testing for this and X, Y, that and X, Y, and Z? And I was like, can you tell me the accuracy of these tests? And they were like, yeah. Oh, well, it could come up as like a false positive, or it could flag you for this and then you might not have it at all. And I'm like, okay, so why would I do that? Why would I do that? Because think about how many women go and do these tests and there's some sort of marker that comes up and it could be an issue, but then it's not. And then they're stressed out the entire pregnancy and their baby feels all the stress that they feel. Mm-hmm. And like you said, yes, okay, there are very specific things that sometimes you can see on these tests, and that's your choice if you want to get them. That's totally your choice. But for me, I was like, why the hell would I do that?
Yeah.
And then it goes back to, again, when it all starts with while you're pregnant, making choices while you're pregnant that impact your baby while you're pregnant, and also making you and yourself, making you believe that you are incapable, making you believe that there's something wrong with your baby. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as your baby is born, like all of the unnecessary procedures that are just standard protocol that like your baby is not born perfect and like there's something wrong with them and they need this, that, and X, Y, and Z. And you're just like, no.
Yeah.
It frustrates me because it's just, you're welcoming your baby into a world of fear.
Where the first people that are going to touch them are like strangers with masks and rubber gloves. And you're lucky in a hospital birth. Honestly, you're lucky if your baby is placed on your bare chest for longer than a minute or two before they're taken and assaulted with a bulb syringe and slapped around and then put in a burrito and given back to you.
Right.
And I just did, it was, I mean, I would call it a consult. It wasn't like paid or anything. It was really just this woman wanting my opinion on the outcome of her birth and how much was necessary and like just trying to process through all of this stuff.
Yeah.
But I had that last night, and the baby had a shoulder dystocia, which from what it sounds like, yeah, it sounded like it could have been legit, but she was also induced and had an epidural and was pushing on her back. So like the effects of the dystocia are made much, much worse by those variables. When dystocia itself is not a problem, if you're able to, you know, deal with it physiologically. So they gave her an episiotomy, the baby slipped out, the doctor put the baby on her chest, and her husband said it was like maybe 5 or 10 seconds before they clamped the cord and cut it and took the baby away and were doing chest compressions to try to get him to breathe. And I was like, you realize that you cut off his source of oxygen to take him away from his mother to try to get him to breathe.
But see,
like, the whole thing was so not unique to their situation.
But so many people don't know that. They don't know about what the placenta does. They don't know about delayed cord clamping. They don't know any of those things that you just talked about.
Yeah. Which, well, and the one that my husband gets like particularly fired up about is episiotomy. Because he's like, so women that you talk to on the street have no idea that they still do this to women.
Mm-hmm.
So how would you even know not to accept that?
Mm-hmm.
And you're completely at their mercy when you're on your back with your feet up in stirrups and they're staring into the eye of your vagina, which, by the way, is the point.
Right.
That is the point, is that you are at their mercy.
Right. And that you're not.
All they have to do is say, oh, well, it was necessary. Mm-hmm. I get to cut your genitals because I'm terrified of birth and I thought it was necessary. Like the whole thing. Oh, but yeah, that's one that my husband gets like particularly fired up about is episiotomy.
Understandably.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, more women should be fired up about episiotomy.
Well, yeah. And he like was shocked, you know, when I told him that that was a thing, because I was talking about spontaneous tearing versus episiotomy and that it makes no sense to do an episiotomy to prevent tearing. Like,
what? But then also the stitching after the fact too.
Well, yeah. So it's all just like, it's so convoluted and horrible, but.
Well, we've had a lot of conversation tonight about all of the things. So
yeah.
Wrapping up, are there any final words you'd like to leave people with or any pieces of advice?
Honestly, that we all need to get more comfortable with the idea of being uncomfortable.
Yes.
Because only when you're uncomfortable is there an opportunity for strength or growth.
I love that so much.
Yeah. It's okay to ruffle feathers. It's okay to piss someone off. It's okay to lose followers if you're afraid of that on social media. Like, your people are out there and they will find you. You don't have to cater to, you know, some random person that follows you who has the potential to get pissed off by you telling the truth. Like, just say it and people will show up.
Yes, people are drawn to it. I understand people not wanting to be controversial or whatever, but be yourself, because if you're not talking about something because you're worried about someone's reaction, like we said earlier, you're not speaking your truth. You're not being your genuine, authentic self. And it takes time to like be okay with being yourself, but that's like what you just said. Get comfortable with being uncomfortable. It's a part of healing. It's a part of growing. It's a part of life. And also, again, when we're tying back into like what we want to model for our kids, that's what I want to model for her. Like, sometimes things are going to suck. Sometimes things are going to be uncomfortable. You're not going to want to do something. Mm-hmm. But look at what happens if you do.
Yeah, the alternative. And that was the boundaries conversation that I was having with Alicia on people pleasing, was what do you have to lose by setting your boundary and what do you have to lose by not setting it?
I love that so much too. Yeah, so anyone who has not listened to that episode just yet, go listen to it.
It's a good one. We went in a lot of different directions on that one too, but it is all part of it.
It's all part of it. It's like, I don't know. It's like everything is just underneath this umbrella, you know? And I feel like genuinely it all starts with pregnancy and birth, and then it's just like you become a mom and like everything just comes out and you're like, okay, well, guess we have to talk about all of these things. For the good
motherhood
though.
From the time that you find out that you're pregnant or figure out that you're pregnant, like, cracks you open and puts you back together again a billion times a day, every single aspect. And then obviously the bigger days, like your birth, or overwhelming times when you have small children. It's going to be a lot more obvious, and that's not a bad thing. That's an invitation for you to really dive into that.
Yeah.
And find the good in that and the bad too, because it's going to be there. You're going to find it.
It's going to be there one way or the other.
It's the only way. Yeah. It's the only way to really deal with it. So.
Amen. Amen, sister. Well, thank you so much for coming on again and for chatting and for just talking, because honestly, I leave our conversations just like so fired up in the best way.
I'm so hopeful. I'm like, somebody gets it.
I'm not alone. Someone understands.
But yeah, well, thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure as always.
Yes.
So if you ever want to do it again, just let me know.
I absolutely will. Would you mind just sharing where people can find you on Instagram? So your podcast and then also your personal account?
Yes. So my account is nikki.french. My first name is N-I-C-K-I. And my last name is just like the language. And then our podcast is Coffee and Consent, all one word, on Instagram. We don't put stuff out super regularly. It's pretty sporadic, but stuff is released on Mondays. We have like 8 episodes out right now, covering a range of topics from obstetric abuse and raising strong kids and vaccines that we did with Olivia and people pleasing most recently. So we have a couple really good ones coming up.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited for the baby doll culture one. I'm excited for all of them because it's just nice when you meet other people and connect with other people who are just being themselves and just ready to put it all out there, especially when it comes to babies and birth and pregnancy and all the things. So,
because that's really where it all starts.
It is.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, listeners, for joining us. And as always, we will see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for joining us this week, listeners. I really hoped you loved this episode as much as I did. If you enjoyed it, learned something new, or know someone you feel may benefit from it, please share it with them. Whether you're posting it on social media, sending it in a text or an email, my goal is to open up these types of conversations within our society, within our families, within our friend groups. As always, if you have any feedback, questions, or know someone you think may be a great guest for the podcast, please connect us on Instagram at the Be Loud About What Matters podcast or send an email to beloudaboutwhatmatters@gmail.com. And if I haven't said it already, if you could please subscribe to the podcast, I would so appreciate it. And also leave a review if it's something that aligns with you and you feel like you want to learn more and you want to keep listening. Help us reach more people. I appreciate you all so much and can't wait to chat with you again next week. Bye-bye.